Welcome to the Chad Taylor Radio Show. Here's Chad Taylor.
So on the last episode of the podcast show, I was talking with my wife, Tracy, and I said I would do a part two this weekend, and we would pick up where we left off. We were talking about recording The Fix in Orlando with Jordan Knight. But I'm going to throw a curveball at you and bring in Jim Check, who is my best friend and was on the road for many years with both Jordan Knight and Danny Wood. So, Jim, how are you, my friend?
Good, buddy. Always nice to hear from you. And thanks for letting me be a part of the podcast.
Well, we've been talking about this. We've been talking about this for a long time, that I wanted to get you on and rehash some memories, because you were involved for a long time, many years, and you've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, but not just you, but your wife, and then eventually even your kids have in some way played a part in this.
Yeah, it's some great memories, you know, like we've often talked about off the podcast and off the air. Probably in those years that we did that with Jordan and the touring, we've lived three lives.
Right. let's start from the beginning. Obviously, I know the answers, but a lot of the folks that subscribe and listen don't. So tell everybody how you got involved. And the first artist I believe that you got involved with me was Danny Wood.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure how deep you went with the audience about this, but back in the 1990s, we had started collecting signatures in Billboard Book of Number One Hits that the great Fred Bronson, a wonderful Billboard writer, had done. And we would take it around to our early radio stops, and when we would do concerts and have the artists who hit number one in America sign this book, and we started it off as a collection. And that lasted through much of the late 90s, we were both in Wisconsin, and Chad had moved down to Florida and got involved in artist management. And that's where he made connections with people like Irene Cara, the woman who did Flashdance and Fame, and then Danny Wood, eventually of New Kids, and Danny then led you over to Jordan. And you got involved in the artist management thing, which opened up an entire new window for that little quest that we had. And that's pretty much, you know, where we pick up. And you know, with you being as magnetic a speaker and communicator as you are, and just a person that people, in my opinion, really want to be around because of your magnetism and your wonderful personality, really drew you into not only being an artist manager, but a friend to those guys.
There was also just a brief encounter with two of the New Kids that you and I had when you were working at MYX.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, it was at Champs, and I was working at WMYX as the night disc jockey, 7 to midnight. And my friend Craig Carson, a longtime disc jockey up here at KISS FM in Milwaukee. KISS FM was a newer top 40 station in 1998, and in early 1999, when Jordan Knight and Joey McIntyre concurrently had solo projects out, KISS FM brought Joey McIntyre to this place called Champs Americana, which would be, like a family-style sit-down restaurant bar. And 1,000 people showed up, literally 1,000. I think 1,000 to 2,000, Chad. That was the first time that you and I actually went on a run where we tried to get a signature in a number one hits book. And we brought our girlfriends there, and the radio station had him there. And literally the fans broke the front door off of Champs Americana.
Right.
To get to him. And there were some people who were left in line and not really able to meet him. And it turned out to be a smashing success. And then, you know, it was onward from that
Do you remember bringing Joey McIntyre to the bathroom?
I don't remember taking him to the bathroom. I think you did. I remember hustling him out to a car, because I think there was either a policeman or a sheriff's uniform that
yes.
We had to smuggle them out in, right?
Yeah, that's right. I thought you went to the bathroom with us. I know it sounds funny me saying that, but he had no idea where the bathroom was, and I just took a wild guess and walked him there. But I think even Joey was surprised at the amount of people that turned out.
Yeah, well, that's when I really realized the power that the New Kids had, still even after their heyday. Now, this was in, I believe, February of 1999, so it was a good 9 years after their heyday. I would think their heyday would probably be late 1988 through 1990. And people just really, I don't think that the girls who were girls at that point and young women at that point ever really forgot. And still, to this day, there are some who haven't forgotten about the effect that the New Kids had on their lives. And I think that they try to emulate how they felt as a preteen or a teenager.
Now let's move on to Jordan Knight, because I remember, and you have to correct me if I'm wrong, but at least I remember you and I crossing paths with him, again, thanks to your employer, at the studio right before we were leaving for New Orleans.
It was, and that was about a month after Kiss FM saw the success of Joey McIntyre and bringing him over to the Champs. So then when Jordan had his project out, his first solo hit, the one that hit the top 10, which, by the way, you bet me it would hit the top 10. I said, no, I don't think it will. And I lost you. It did hit the top 10. So I have to give it to you on that.
that
unintended.
I love that. Thank you.
You're welcome. He ended up coming to the radio station because Kiss FM saw, well, if we had the success with Joey McIntyre, certainly the lead singer of most of the New Kids songs, if we bring him into the studio, well, it would we'd be able to duplicate that and then have it in a more controlled environment where you're not having 3,000 fans, you know, kick down the door. So we did it kind of a secretive way, and we went in there and met him. And that was the first meeting that we actually had with Jordan, and that was in 1999.
And for me, I recall a story. This is going back to, it'd be like 1993, if I'm not mistaken, 92 or 93. I had met the guys briefly in Iowa City, and I met Donnie.
Well, you were doing the performing.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I met Donnie. He was playing baseball, and I wish I could remember the venue's name, but they were playing like a pickup game of baseball, and it was him and Jay Stone and a bodyguard named Robo. And I found a picture not too long ago of Donnie, and he was like in a Baltimore Orioles jersey. And I found those photos. So it's funny when you look back, and who would have thought in a million years, by the way, when you and I briefly talked to Jordan in 1999, that you and I would become friends with him and work for him. I mean, if somebody would have said that to us in the car on our way down south, we would have laughed.
Never. And I just remember how excited we were just to get his signature in the number one hits book. Remember, that really kicked off that New Orleans trip.
It did.
The right way. Yeah. I mean, we were all super excited and never thought that we'd ever meet him again. And, you know, all the credit goes to you in there. What you really did in Florida, making those connections and doing your thing and starting off that artist management, that really opened up a big door and, you know, brought not only financial rewards to you, but rewards that, you know, friendships for life.
That's true.
With those guys, yeah.
So let's get your take on the first time meeting Danny Wood. What were your impressions? Now remember, you got to be honest here, Jim.
Yeah, oh, I will. I'm
I know you will.
100% honest with everything. Yeah,
of course you are.
He was. It was almost as if we knew him, or at least this is just my feeling, though. The first time that I met him in 03, it was like I knew him my entire life. He's like one of us. I remember him. I don't know. He was having some sort of an issue maybe with his wife where, you know, I don't know if he was separated or if he was divorced. And maybe you can fill in the blanks on some of that. But he ended up coming in the car and he rolled down. This is pulling away from the airport 5 minutes after we had met. Rolled down the passenger window and then leaned out, and I didn't know what the hell he was doing, if he was going to jump out of the car or what, but he yelled out at the top of his lungs, "The dog is loose." I remember that. "The dog is loose!" I didn't know what that meant at the time, but I had to ask him on the way home. But yeah, it was a really great weekend because he stayed here for about a week. You did the tour and promotion of some of his solo stuff, and he went on the air at the local NBC station here, and we stayed up all night. Do you remember that first night that he was here? We had early morning stuff at the NBC station where we had to get up at 4 a.m, but we didn't want to go to sleep because we thought that A, we'd oversleep the alarm, or B, we'd feel like complete crap the next day. So we went out to a bar, and I had my wisdom teeth removed that day. So I was on pain medication. So you guys were drinking. I was driving. I had one drink. But I didn't want to OD with the pain medication.
Right.
And we went out to Denny's. I remember eating at Denny's at 1 a.m. And then, did you want me to tell the story about what we saw after we took the shower?
I don't think there's a problem with that one.
Okay.
I don't think Danny would care about that either.
I don't think so either. Knowing him, he's about as open can get.
Right.
To kind of freshen up, my wife and I, fiance at the time, we took a shower to kind of freshen up, and we got out in our spare bedroom. we walked in to get some clothes, and face down, asleep, I think he was taking a nap, stark naked for whatever reason, Danny Wood. The full moon was showing in the morning. It's like 3:30 in the morning. And I'm thinking, this is the first day that we met him. You know, so he's obviously feeling comfortable around us. The dog apparently loose.
In more ways than one at that point.
Yeah, in more ways than one. Yeah, that was a pretty revealing. I knew that the friendship would be good from that point forward. Went and did the NBC thing, and then, you know, we hadn't slept. Drove out to Madison. Did the Connie and Fish. They were doing the morning show at Z104 in Madison, and did some promotion there. And we had at Perkins. I remember that, and I was so tired. I hadn't slept. You hadn't. Well, you slept a little bit because I drove to Madison, but then Danny drove my car home from Madison to Oak Creek with, I think, Amy guiding him in. And I don't think we really slept that much that day. We went to the mall. We watched Boston. He's a Boston Red Sox fan. So we watched a Boston Red Sox Seattle Mariners game because I remember him talking about Ichiro. And then you guys got in an argument about President Clinton.
Oh, that's right.
That night.
That's right. I think because, didn't I? I think I went to President Clinton's library by myself, and Danny didn't want to go. I don't know if he wasn't a fan or what it was. I can't remember, but that's what started it all.
But the funny thing is, and the dynamic with you guys is that, you know, you may have agreed on things, but what he would do is he would rival you, or he would take an opposite side just to get an argument with you. He'd be like, bust your balls all the time.
Oh, he would do that with everything. I remember one particular road trip. We were driving, I think it was in Indiana, and we were talking about the greatest hip-hop MCs of all time. And he had said that Notorious B.I.G. was the best of all time. And I had, of course, said, wait a minute. You know, I took another stance. I said Rakim from Eric B. and Rakim was the best.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I started to say to Danny, I think people say that the Notorious B.I.G. was the best because he had passed away. And so then we went. That argument lasted a good hour and a half. No kidding. Neither one of us was going to let up. And so...
The funny thing is, I think he would escalate things on purpose.
Oh, of course he did. He loved to bust my balls. He used to call you and I the albino sword fighters. That was our nickname.
Right. Yeah, because he would point out pictures. He said, "You guys look so gay in these pictures." and said, "Well, okay, let's take a look at some of these pictures that you had in the past." And then you said, "Oh yeah, this is great. Let's go ahead and call up some of these photos online." Shut the hell up, you asshole.
Oh, because, yeah, we did find some really funny pictures of the new kids. And by the way, it's okay because that was the time back then. That's how you dressed. That's the way you looked.
Sure.
So our point back to him was, wait a minute. It's the same thing with us. That was the time. Look at them. Look at the fashion sense in some of those pictures with the new kids. They cringe now. You bring up the Christmas album cover to Danny, and he just wants to flip out. You know?
Yeah, and he did.
And he did not like
that
cover shoot.
And that was a good comeback that you had at him, because he started breaking balls again at you, and then you had reminded him of the Christmas shoot. and then it kind of escalated him a little bit. So yeah, you guys knew how to touch each other's buttons once you got in the zone, and that friendship went a few years on. But all in good fun.
It really was.
He's a great guy. I really do love him, and I have a very special place in my heart for him and Jordan, for sure. What were some of your real fun recollections and memories? Did you ever get into telling the story how you started up with Danny?
No, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm bouncing all over the place this season, and I think that's okay to do that. I think it's okay to bounce around. My first face-to-face meeting with him was in 2002, when he finally came to Citrus County, Florida, to perform the very first show with his new band for his solo project. The album was called Second Face, and this was going to be the first time, besides rehearsals, that they actually played for a live audience. So I set up the venue. I promoted it on Citrus 95.3, and then he finally came to town. We did the show. We had been talking, you know, pretty much every day leading up to that show, and there was talk about him taking the show on the road. And I said, you know what, I've always wanted to go out, be a road manager, and I told him I had a little bit of experience as far as stage managing, and I actually just had gotten off the road with Irene Cara, who you mentioned earlier. We had gone over to Europe together, and it really, it blossomed right from there. He's like, yeah, I'd love to have you go along. And shortly thereafter that performance, we had took off and the bus picked me up on the interstate. My dad dropped me off at a rest area. And then the bus picked me up and we headed north to New York. That was our very first show together. And we had a blast. But one of my favorite memories with Danny would have to be when we went over to Germany. And we were out on the road and we did this big radio show for RTL. They were like the big radio group in Germany. And we were on the same bill as Kelly Clarkson. She had just won American Idol, and Michelle Branch.
Right.
And I remember being in a hotel just outside of Berlin with all these different artists that were performing on this big show. And my phone rang in my hotel room and it was Danny on the other line. And he said, "Who is that girl outside your door?" And I had no idea what he was talking about. Danny's like you. He was fit. He had just got done working out, and there was a gym on the same floor as my hotel room. So he had passed this girl, and he wanted to know who that was. She was sitting outside of the gym, but she was being interviewed by, I don't know if it was a radio reporter or a TV reporter, somebody. So I said, "I have no idea, but I'll go find out." So I played Inspector Gadget. I pretended like I was going to go work out, so I didn't look, you know, obvious. So I grabbed a towel out of the bathroom. I walked out of the room, and I didn't know who she was. So what I did is I sat down. There was this sitting area across from where she was doing the interview. I just sat down there and I kind of eavesdropped. Well, this lady came over and sat down next to me, and this attractive lady. And we just got to talking, and she said her name was Ann Edelblut, who now manages Carrie Underwood, but she was managing Kelly Clarkson at the time. And she told me who she was. And I said, oh, yeah, that's right. I watched the show. You got to remember, this was season one of American Idol. So not everybody was hip to it at this point yet. But I told her.
You being overseas, they may not have known really who she was.
They didn't. I think that was her first trip. But I do remember after meeting her, I'd be watching TV in Germany on that trip. And they were starting to play the video for her single Miss Independent. So, So anyway, she told me who she was. And after the interview, she introduced me to Kelly and we got to talking, and she wasn't wearing any makeup or anything. She was just like me. We were just, you know, gotten up, and she was just had such an awesome personality. And then she asked me who I worked for. And I told her I was there with Danny Wood from New Kids, and she started flipping out. She was a big, big New Kids fan, had their posters on her wall when she was growing up. And she's like, "Can I meet him?" And I'm like, "Absolutely." And so I ring Danny back when I get to my room. I said, "Hey, it's Kelly Clarkson. She's on this TV show, American Idol. She just won. She's a diehard New Kids fan. She'd love to meet you." So we both met up in Kelly's room while she was getting ready, while her glam squad was in there doing her makeup and hair, and just chatted with her. And just we hit it off perfectly. And then we met back at the venue, and then she introduced us to Michelle Branch. And I got this great picture that's in my photo album of Kelly, me, Danny, and Michelle Branch just hanging out on the side of the stage watching all the other performers. And all of us at the time when we took that picture were watching, you're going to have to help me out here, Jim. I'm having mental block, but the Sporty Spice from the Spice Girls.
Oh, yeah, Melanie Chisholm.
There you go. Okay, we were watching her perform. So, but that's just one of my fond memories. Another great one that I remember is we were shooting a music video in Germany, and Danny, it was for What If, the song What If. And Danny did not like the shoes that wardrobe provided. You know, the New Kids are very loyal to Adidas. They still are.
Oh, yeah. Always have been, yeah.
Yeah, Adidas has been good to them over the years, and they've been in turn good to Adidas. And he, for some reason, didn't like the shoes, but so he put mine on. I had Adidas, but Danny's foot is a lot bigger than mine. And I don't know how he crammed his foot in there, but I laugh every time watching the video, even to this day, when I see the scenes of him with my Adidas on, because I knew he was in so much pain. But
he's like a full two sizes bigger than yours.
Easily,
right?
Easily. And it was just so funny. He fought through the pain just to make sure that he had the right pair of shoes on in the video. But
that's a great story about Kelly Clarkson. I knew about that trip, but I didn't really know the meat of it until you got into that. I remember seeing the picture of you and Michelle and Kelly and Danny, but I didn't really know the extent of that story. That was cool.
I'll tell you something else cool about Kelly is shortly thereafter, when I got back stateside, my daughter Mackenzie was in fourth grade, if I'm not mistaken, and they had this Great American Teach-In. And I had reached out to Ann Edelblut, who, again, was Kelly's manager at the time, and was telling her what I was doing, that I was going to surprise my daughter's class with Aaron Carter coming to school to perform for all the kids. Nobody knew, by the way, just me and the principal. And she said, oh, that's so cool. What if I sent every kid in that school a copy of Kelly's CD single? It was for Breakaway at the time. And I said, oh, my God, they would love that. She said, I'll take it a step further. Why don't you get me every classroom teacher's name and I'll have her sign a picture then to all the teachers' classrooms, too. So they sent all these boxes of CD singles and just so many signed copies to different classrooms. I've never forgotten it. And Kelly holds a special place in my heart. And then when they toured through Florida, where I was living at the time, they invited me and my daughter out to go see Kelly perform with, the one that was the second season, a runner-up. What's it? Clay Aiken. She was touring with Clay Aiken, so we had a chance to see her again. And she was telling Mackenzie just how great our time in Germany was. And it just made me feel like the coolest dad on the planet. So Kelly will always hold a special place.
Yeah, it's a cool thing that you've always integrated your kids into the mix. You know, Macy, in more recently, where she's had an opportunity to meet everybody who's on the charts. Taylor Swift jumps out. She's met Nelly, Mackenzie, and John. You know, John really wasn't like Mackenzie or Macy, where he'd really want to meet a lot of the people. And same thing with Tyler.
Yeah, but, true. Very true.
But the girls, they really have had a chance to meet some A-listers over the years.
Let's jump to Jordan Knight, because you spent a lot more time with Jordan on the road, and there's a reason for that. Oddly enough, you had a transition in your life, and you had some downtime, and you were able to join us.
I did. Yeah, it was a neat transition. I tired of radio. After I got canned from WXLC, which is in North Chicago, due to budgetary reasons, inconsistent work ethic, whatever you might want to say, maybe a combination of both, a little rivaling because they blew out my boss and everybody else and in the building. I ended up deciding to get out of radio in late 2001 full time. And I went into UW-Milwaukee to get my teaching degree. And I was doing that from 2001 to 2004. And this was right about the time that you had transitioned from Danny, where Danny wasn't doing the on-the-road stuff anymore, the solo stuff. But Jordan really started a surreal life on VH1 and was also still making music. Lou Pearlman, the guy behind NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys, had signed him to Transcontinental Records. And you said, hey, you know, why, if you want to make some money and we want to have some fun, you know, I'm managing Jordan. You want to go out on the road and be his tour coordinator? And it's like, let me think about that. Of course. Get a chance to spend time with my best friend and see another side of the music industry, you know, because for years you and I had been in radio and saw the broadcasting end. Now it was enabling us to see what touring life would be with a pretty big star. You know, granted, it wasn't selling out gigantic like Wells Fargo Arena, or it wasn't the Fiserv Forum, but you know, he's playing good venues and selling them out. And you were doing a great job promoting that. And we started hitting the road. And if I remember correctly, that first leg that I joined you guys on, you had been going at it for a while and doing some international stuff and some other domestic stuff. But we did the California leg to start off, and that was
September
of 2004, 2003.
That sounds right. I think it was, you know, I said on the last podcast, I said Jim Check is the best with dates. I'm terrible, but I think you're right. Maybe it was, well, it was either 2003, end of 2003 or first part of 2004.
Somewhere. I think it might have been end of 2003. I don't know if it would have been end of 2004, because at that time, Amy and I were engaged and we got married in 2005. So, yeah, we were also saving up for a wedding as well, so that that money came in handy. I want to say 2004, because it was right before our wedding. Yeah. So irregardless, I remember it was September 21st. It was the first day of fall. And I thought, wow, what a great way to start off. And we start off in San Francisco at the Independent. It was a venue in San Francisco.
Man, I love that you remember the name of that venue.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, because I was thinking this is going to be the first time that I'm actually going to be out on the road with you guys full time, because we did that thing at the beginning where my dad joined us in January. We were out on the road, but that was just pretty much a one-off.
And at this point, too, you had gotten really close to Jordan. And for those that don't know, Jordan is, he doesn't let a lot of people in. But when he lets you in, boy, does he ever. I mean, he just embraces you full on. And Jordan loves to be in intimate settings. He likes, you know, just having a handful of people around where he can let his guard down a little bit, let his hair down, and just be himself. And we had so many laughs on that trip. And
oh, yeah.
We just, and I tell people this all the time, and I'm glad you're on to back me up on this. Yes, I enjoyed performing with Jordan on stage, but the things that I miss the most and the memories I treasure the most are those moments just hanging out in the hotel or in the car or on the tour bus and just laughing about absolutely the most ridiculous stuff and having inside jokes and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, there were so many laughs. And as I think about it, yes, it was 04 because it was a transition period. I would have been going to school in 03. The transition period you had talked about is I was going to go for a teaching job, and I wanted to teach at my old high school. And they said, well, we have 200 applicants. And the entire reason why I went back to get the teaching certificate is because the principal at my high school said, you get a teaching certificate, we'll have a history job for you. Well, at the time, Wisconsin was going through a deal where they were blowing out unions, and teachers were really in a bad way as far as the Milwaukee public school system. So there was an exodus to the suburban schools, some of these established teachers. Well, they decided to choose. They had two history openings. In the interview process, they said, which is, you know, you never really want to, you want to hear this, but you don't want to hear this. There were 200 applicants. I'm sorry we didn't hire you this time, which I was devastated because that was the entire, I just threw away 2.5 years of my life, I was thinking at first. They said, you finished third. And I'm thinking, yeah, I would have been happier if you'd told me I would finish 200.
Right.
You know, we had two spots open and you finished third. Then I got to thinking, you know, in hindsight, as the years passed, well, I wonder how many people they told finished third. You know, was it 10 people that they told finished third? But irregardless, everything happens for a reason, and it was meant to be, and it opened up a great opportunity because in the interim, I was able to go out on the road with you guys, and you really kind of saved me from scrambling and saved me from going to the Milwaukee public schools. And really kind of being in a bad situation. And that ultimately led me to the career that I am in now and really kind of tied us over to that point.
Now, we would
with
need
a lifetime
10,
of memories.
We would need 10 podcasts to go through like every memory, every story, everything that was funny that happened. But a couple of stories that stand out, and I'm going to have you tell the story. And I was hoping that Bubba would be on with us, but I'll have Bubba talk about it when he's on with me. But there is a great story, and I believe we were coming out of Pennsylvania driving. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think you know exactly what story I'm talking about.
Well, I know we were heading to New York City. That I do know. I can't remember where we were coming from. Have you ever led into this or
no,
said on
no.
any of the podcasts?
Nope,
okay.
nope. And this is what the fans were hoping for. They wanted these types of stories, these behind-the-scenes moments, if you will.
You're going to get a couple. Do the people know who Bubba is? Did you?
Well, for those who don't know, set it up.
Sure. Bubba, I think he was a New Kid's bodyguard back in the day, right?
Yes.
In the late 80s, early 90s.
Okay. He was actually, I believe, Jordan's personal bodyguard, too.
I see. Yeah. So he comes back into the picture. I think the reason why he was back along with us is we were in Los Angeles on that initial run that I was talking about in September of 2004, and we were going to go meet Flava Flav. Of Public Enemy, who was in the Surreal Life House with Jordan.
Yes, great and, story, by the way. I'm so glad you're talking about this.
Yep, so I'll keep it brief because...
No, please.
On track.
This is a good one.
Yeah, but we went to, and I can't remember where we were in, and I do remember you put me on that bull at the Saddle Ranch around the same time, so my back was still kind of ringing when we went to go see him.
I think the show was at the Key Club, wasn't it?
Okay, it could have been. Yeah, I know it was right down. It was right on that main drag, and it was right down the street from Saddle Ranch,
Sunset,
Roxy and Sunset Boulevard. Right. So we went there, and it was going to be Flava Flav's first time back on stage in a few years, if I remember correctly. Right. That was the night that he was going to go back on.
Yep. Sans Public Enemy was just him.
Right. Yep. So he was in full form when we ended up meeting him. You know, there was a cloud of smoke.
Oh yeah, drunk and
there
high.
There was a cigarette smoke down there, and he had the clock on him. And
for those that don't know, I don't want to interrupt Jim, but for those that don't know us well, Jim and I are not big drinkers. We'll have a drink here and there, but we have never in our lives smoked a cigarette or tried pot. So this is like really out of our element.
we've been around it, and I've been at parties like that, but never in an area where, you know, I'm surprised the fire alarms weren't going off because there was so much smoke in the room. Like, I could hardly see Flava Flav when we walked in.
And not to mention, by the way, I think we were the only two white guys there.
We were, and he kicked everybody else out of the room. He goes, get the hell out of here, man. My fam's here. And I'm thinking, you know, my fam's here. This is the first time that I've ever met him. And, you know, these guys are giving us looks on the way out. You know, he kicked everybody out. And, you know, we took pictures of them and talked to them for a little bit. And he's like, where's Jordan? Where's Jordan? And I think Jordan's grandmother was it his grandpa who was dying?
And I think it was his grandpa at the time. You're right. Yeah.
Grandpa.
Yeah, I think you're right.
He was getting updates from his family. And he stayed back at the hotel. So Flav was kind of bummed that he wasn't there. But he was really cool to us. And you know, we did our thing backstage, and then we went back up, and then somebody, I think, discharged a gun. You know, I don't even know if Flava Flav ever went on and performed that night.
He did not.
Yes, somebody ended up firing some gun off there, but Bubba was with us, I think, that night, just kind of hanging out. He wasn't part of the touring at that point, but he grabbed you and I and kind of escorted us out of there, made sure that we got out. And,
do you remember when we got outside, all the Los Angeles County Sheriff's vehicles were out in the middle of the road? It was craziness.
Yeah. Well, it was crazy. It was like a movie because we were walking out and they were pulling in, you know, so we got out right as they were driving up, and then we're thinking, geez, could this day be any crazier? You know, we had all that fun earlier, and then we Flava Flav, and I don't know if that was the day, but I know that was on that run that we were on in Los Angeles, where we played in a celebrity softball game. We met John Bon Jovi, and that was another crazy deal where we were at the Roxy, and Bruce Springsteen's wife was performing the day before Petty, was performing the day before Jordan. So Trevor, the manager of the Roxy, said, hey, do you want to go ahead and see Patty, Bruce's wife, play? And we're like, yeah, of course, because you and I are thinking, well, you know, maybe we might be able to meet Bruce Springsteen.
Right.
So that didn't happen, but he put us in the VIP area, and we were there with Brian Gillis, Briz of LFO. And I remember him tapping us and saying, you know, kind of like, an, you know, through gritted teeth, guys, turn around, look who's behind you. And, you know, you kind of casually scratch the back of your neck or whatever and look back. And sure enough, it's sitting right behind us, which is crazy, is John Bon Jovi. You know, why he wouldn't be in the front of the VIP section is beyond me. But I'm thinking, holy crap. And so we got to meet him, and he was super genuine. Do you remember as he was walking out of there, you know, people had recognized him, and he didn't, like, run off to his car. He parked across the street in a parking structure. He took pictures with people and signed autographs for people. And he was one of the most genuine people at the time. I thought, wow, this is talk about an A-list.
And you and I, by the way, did not want to interrupt him because he was talking to a sound engineer. And Briz, I think, had a couple of cocktails at that point. He goes, give me your number one hits book. And so we were like, there's no way he's getting that book signed. He's not getting past security. And sure enough, we look back and he's not only getting the book signed, but he's sitting there talking with Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah. And he comes back, and Briz comes back and says, wow, what a cool guy.
Yeah, shout out to Brian Gillis, Briz. In fact, Briz and I just were messaging each other today. He was asking about my national radio show. He's like, I think I'm hearing you out here in Massachusetts. I'm on a station out there, North Shore 104.9. So, yeah, I miss Briz a lot. So shout out to Brian Gillis and his family. Good people.
He was a good guy. We had so much fun, Briz and Sawa.
Oh, yeah.
She was
Michael Pat. Yeah, those are all good. The whole Transcon, Joel Schaller, Elizabeth Neff. Those were just so many great memories. All right. So we got to now get back to the Bubba Ganter story.
Yeah,
now, here, let me set the scene, though, because we're driving to New York. Jim is driving. Bubba's in the passenger seat. And then Jordan and I are asleep in the back seat. And you take it from there.
Well, Jordan and Chad are sleeping in the back. Bubba's in the passenger seat, and I was driving. This is usually the configuration that we'd have on the tour because one of my deals was driving, and Bubba is a very large man, and I don't know if he had sleep apnea or diffused septum or what, but he would snore
like narcolepsy. Yeah.
You know, and he was almost like narcoleptic because he'd be sitting having a conversation. And I know I'm not the most exciting person as it is, but, you know, he'd be falling asleep as I was talking with him. Well, I would try to keep him up because I did not want him to fall asleep, because when I say he snores and it sounds like, you know, something out of a cartoon, you know, the the air horn. I mean, it is loud, and loud to the point where you can't turn the music up to drown it out.
Right.
So,
and by the way, this was not Jim's first opportunity with Bubba snoring. In fact, there was one story real quick where Jim had to share a room with Bubba, and he's like, that's not going to happen because I'll not get any sleep. He said, I will sleep in your guys' bathtub to avoid that. So.
And then you guys, and then once I said that, you would put me in the room with him all the time. You know, you'd like on the road. And then finally, it was in Pennsylvania, I think. I went and I slept in between you and Jordan in the bed.
Yes.
Guys, I'm sleeping in this bed. I think the three of us were in a queen size bed.
We did. We looked like the Three Stooges sleeping in one bed. Like when you watch the Three Stooges and they're all in one bed sleeping, that was us.
That was us. And I tell you what, I slept better that night than I did any night that I was in the room with Bubba. Because this man was loud. This great guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not disparaging him and saying this guy was a jerk. It's just when he would fall asleep, you know, sometimes it's uncontrollable. You don't know when you're going to snore. You know, and he's certainly not just going to stay up.
When no, I'm glad you pointed that out because you guys were really dear friends and are still dear friends. So.
Oh, yeah. I love him.
But this story is priceless.
But, you know, you get pissed off when you're sitting and you're listening to this for an hour and a half and I can't talk to you or Jordan because you guys are asleep and I can't turn the radio up to drown it out. So we're approaching New York and my patience is wearing thin anyway because I've been driving for hours. And I kind of like would shake the car. Like you're driving either an Escalade or a minivan. I can't remember what it was, but I went, you know, like left and right on the steering wheel to kind of like move him to kind of hope to naturally wake him up. So meanwhile, like everything is moving side to side in the car. Well, he wakes up. Or you remember he'd fall asleep and he'd be holding his phone. This is in the early days of texting. He'd be texting people and the phone would drop down on the floor and he'd instantly wake him up. And then he'd wake up and pick up the phone. He'd hold it for a little bit, snore. The phone would drop out. He'd wake up again. Well, I was shaking this back and forth, but I think I shook him a little bit too hard. He hit his head on the side of the window. You know, I woke him up, and then he was furious. He was pissed. And, you know, swore a little bit, and he had these big-ass hands. I mean, he's a college football player. He had these big-ass hands, and he, like, wound up, you know, like, behind his head. And I'm thinking, what is this? He's going to throw a punch at me? And he slammed his fist down on the dashboard, on the top of the dashboard, and it disconnected the dashboard from the vehicle and it landed on our knees, you know, so like the whole front panel had fallen off, you know, where the radio is and the heat comes out and stuff. But both of us were so stubborn that we drove through New Jersey with this thing resting on our thighs. I'm surprised it didn't cut off our blood supply all the way into New York City. And neither one of us pushed the thing back up to reconnect it. But I was sitting there for about 40 minutes just staring down. I didn't think that I didn't even think that that component came off like that. So I've never seen something like that before or ever will in my life again.
I think another great Bubba story is when you and I were pushing his buttons. We were in
Baltimore,
and we were at a Fuddruckers. Do you remember this story?
Yes, I do. And I just got a Billboard magazine. We were looking around the Billboard chart, and Sierra's Goodies, I think, was number one at the time. If I remember correctly, because we had met her in Ontario. I think she was on Canada's version of MTV, which is Much Music. And we were coming off of that because we wanted to find out who was where on the charts. And we were looking at some of these names on the charts, you know, like Big Skills with a Z or you know, what were some of the other names that were on there?
I mean, but they were obnoxious names.
Yeah.
Like Freaky Zeke and, I mean, just... Yeah. Lunacy is what it was on the charts.
Right. And I remember, you know, he was, he kind of took it down the other road. He's like, man, why are you always saying this stuff to the black artists? And I think you had said, because they're the only artists that are having all these messed up names.
Right. I was like, we were equal opportunists. It didn't matter what color you were. It was just the funky names that were listed next to the title of the song.
Yeah, no doubt.
Oh, and but
if a white guy would have had a messed up name, I would have been.
He got so mad at us. Oh, he was so mad that day.
Yeah, I don't know. There must have been another outside factor because that usually wasn't him. You know, he would be down for laughing and joking around just like we were. You know, we weren't getting racial or stupid with him. We were just you know, and we had a better relationship with him than that anyway. You know, he could we could talk about how white we were. You know, he didn't and then he'd laugh at that stuff, and you know, it would go, it'd be reciprocated.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, him and I keep in touch, and we talk so much. And I was texting with him the other day. He just took another great job out in Flagstaff, Arizona. But, you know, for many years, it was like, I don't know, 3-4 years, maybe he was doing Game Shakers on Nickelodeon playing the character Bunny. So he's had success both as a bodyguard in the entertainment business and then as an actor. Not only has he done TV, but he's done movies. He's done commercials. I'm so proud of him. And I'm really happy for him now, as he told me, this is now kind of like the fourth phase in his life that we're all getting to. Now he's thinking about retirement. And so he's got a great job working for the city. And I'm going to have him on the podcast this season, too. So we're going to connect maybe next week or the week after, but I'll have him on. He's got a ton of stories to share, not only the time that he was with us, but I'm going to have him talk about when he first got involved. You know, Biscuit got him involved. So we're going to talk about when he first started working for the New Kids back in the day.
In the heyday of New Kids. And he's probably got some, he probably had some really, really good stories that, that he could tell. You know, you should get Danny on to talk about some of those stories. If he's willing to go ahead and be as upfront as he is with us, you know, I don't know if he'll go both feet in, but, you know, cause there were some pretty wild stories that, that we've heard, some of those stories, I think your podcast listeners and the New Kids fans would absolutely love to hear.
Oh yeah. I'm hoping Jordan, Jeff Timmons is going to be on, like to invite Danny back on, MC Brains. One guy who I'll never invite back on, I will never invite Brian Abrams on. I still hold a grudge with that guy.
Oh, God. Did you tell the story about when he ended up coming to your house in Florida?
I did not.
Oh, do you want to?
Of course.
I'll
with
do
pleasure.
It. Tell that story.
With pleasure. People have to realize that Brian Abrams, this almost said Brian Adams. It would have been funnier
awesome
if it was Brian Adams.
Yeah, right.
But... I'm trying to think.
I'd be disheartened if it was Brian Adams.
I would have put up with anything if it was Brian Adams.
Yeah,
I would,
no kidding.
I would have let it go at that point. But this was the
You could have sent it, and I would have done it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. This was the first meeting in person for me with Brian Abrams. I invited him down with his girlfriend at the time. We were living just outside Tampa, so we invited him down. Tracy and I were in Orlando with Jeff and Jordan. We were doing this charity event for Joey Fatone from NSYNC. It was like around the holidays. And we were also visiting radio in Orlando. So Tracy was kind enough to pick them, but again, never met them before, was kind enough to pick them up in Tampa and then drive them the hour and a half to Orlando to where we all were. So they came down, they joined us for the Joey Fatone event, and they went to XL 1067 in Orlando with us. And
still
Brian,
going strong.
Yeah, Brian and I were going to talk about me managing him because, again, at the time I was working with Jordan, Jeff, I had MC Brains. I just, you know, it made sense for him to come on board. He wasn't doing anything. And I'm going to put this out there, though, to show that I'm very fair. I still think to this day that Brian Abrams has one of the most soulfulest voice I've ever heard, if that's a word, soulfulest.
He really does.
Of any white guy on the planet, Brian Abrams' voice is. It's amazing. It really is. So anyway, they spent the night with us in Orlando, but we had two different, they had a room. I had my room with Tracy. Or no. Here's how it worked in Orlando. Let me take that back. Lou Pearlman had let us use, he had condos in Orlando. So it was one of those condos, though, that had a common kitchen area and living room and then two bedrooms.
Yeah.
So they stayed in one, we stayed in the other. Then the next day is when we drove back to where we lived, which would be right outside Tampa. It was Newport Richey area. And I invited them to stay at our house before they flew home so we could get to know each other a little bit better. Jeff Timmons went home. Jordan went home. So then we would have some one-on-one time. Prior to them coming, though, I had stocked up the refrigerator with just about everything. You know me, Jim. I like to be a good host.
Of course.
House was cleaned. Plenty of food. But Brian insisted on cooking for us. He wanted to cook a special dish that he was known for. And if I'm not mistaken, it was something Cajun. It's been a long time, but it was something spicy and something, you know, Tracy and I are both picky eaters. So we were both.
You like spice, though.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, you and I, you're like Tracy and I, we're very picky. So we were, he was telling us about some of the ingredients and just, but, you know, we wanted to be polite, you know, but you could tell Tracy was like, oh my lordy. So he asked where the nearest grocery store was. There was a Publix around the corner from us. So we gave him directions there. And again, I want to reiterate this. So we had plenty of groceries in the house. I was prepared to cook for them or order food in. I wanted to be the host, but he was adamant that he wanted to cook for us. So he went to the grocery store with Kim. They came back. They stunk up the kitchen with whatever they were cooking. And believe me, it stunk, Jim. It stunk. But again, we wanted to be nice, and so we ate it. Later on the night.
Was it like a chicken dish?
I think so. And I know I could be wrong, but I think you're right.
Okay.
So we eat outside. We had this great entertainment area outside. We had a screened-in pool and a beautiful patio.
It was. Yeah, it was nice.
So we ate outside. And then later on, we were tired. It had been a long day. So we set them up in the guest room. We were in our master bedroom. And we feel, I shouldn't say we feel, we hear. That'd be better to say. We hear some noise outside of our door. Like somebody's slipping something under the door, almost like when you're in a hotel and you can hear them slide your bill under the door.
Right.
That's what we heard. So I get up, and there was a receipt under the door, and he had marked off like what half that grocery bill would be. So he wanted us to pay for half of the groceries that he insisted on going to buy.
Unbelievable.
So at
that point, you're probably beside yourself, but also thankful that it wasn't like a swinger's note, you know, that, hey, why don't you meet us in the other room? but to take a look, to get billed in your own house.
Right. So anyway, here's the thing. To save the drama, I never said anything about it. I gave him half the amount. I think I wrote him a check. And then they flew home. We ended up still working with him. Which that should have been the first sign not to do it right there, right? But I think I'm a glutton for punishment. And then it was one of the worst professional experiences of my life. And listen, I know that people struggle with things and have problems with whether it be alcohol or drugs or whatever it might be. So I'm sensitive to that. But there's more to that than just that. I mean, Brian had a bad problem with alcohol. And when I say somebody would turn from Dr. Jekyll into Mr. Hyde when they drank, Brian would. And I remember setting him up with the promoters I was working with. He would go to these shows. He would be drunk out of his mind. I mean, just. And then he wouldn't even sometimes even perform. Or if he performed, he'd fall off the stage, embarrass himself, not finish the show. And you know me, I don't talk about those types of things lightly. I don't talk about things that my other artists have gone through, but Brian is a different story only because Tracy and I, time after time after time after time, tried to help him, and he hurt us in more ways than one. And it all came to a head when I pitched him for a reality show called Mission Man Band that VH1 was doing. I knew that he needed the money. I thought it would be really good for him to get back out on TV. Plus, he was joining a great cast, Jeff Timmons, Chris Kirkpatrick, Rich Cronin, somebody I absolutely adore and love and miss to this day.
Yeah.
And I got him on the show. They weren't even thinking about him, but they had booked Jeff, who I was managing at the time and working with, so I had pitched Brian Abrams. And they decided to go down to Oklahoma to film him to do some B-roll and see if it would work. Well, they get all the way down there, Jim, and they can't even find him. So you got to remember, they have a cameraman, a producer, all these people down in Oklahoma, and nobody can find Brian. He had gone out again on a drinking binge.
Jeez, and this isn't a local television station. This is VH1.
It's a network.
Yeah.
So, and finally, we're able to track him down. Tracy's able to track him down, and he just starts laughing at her on the phone. He's still coming down off of whatever he was drinking, and he just embarrassed us to no end, but they were able to get the B-roll, and he was working for his girlfriend, who now is his wife's father. I believe it was like a tire place where he was like flipping tires. And anyway, they ended up booking him on the show, for better or worse, and he never paid me my commission on that.
Jeez.
I was supposed to get around $5,000. That was my take for, you know, negotiating the deal, getting him involved. He never paid it. That's just the type of person he is. But then fast forward, you see that things never changed. He got arrested multiple times again for domestic violence, for not paying child support. He had totally destroyed his relationship with the other guys in Color Me Bad. Most recently,
he pushed one of them off the stage.
Yeah, most recently, he was kicked out of the band again for pushing Mark Calderon on stage at a show. And so this is the type of guy he is. And that's the only reason, by the way, I bring the story up. I've been keeping this season light. I'm not talking about anything questionable, because as I said, my podcast, I don't cast stones at anybody because, believe me, I live in a glass house. So
we have plenty of dirty laundry that to the both of us.
I have plenty of dirty laundry. It's just as much time on the road as it was positive and fun for me. It cost me a marriage. It cost me a lot of time with my older kids. So believe me when I tell you, I'm not an altar boy, but I never ever treated people like that ever. And so, yes, I'm still bitter and I still hold that grudge because if Brian had taken the time to apologize, I'd be over it. It's not about the money at this point. It's not about the past. Again, I know that people have different struggles. I appreciate that. And if they can get themselves healthy and right, I'm all about it. Right.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you know, it goes to a greater sort of story here with a lot of these stars, especially from the 80s and 90s. You know, you see, Whitney Houston. Michael Jackson, substance abuse and alcohol and stuff, just completely, Whitney Houston, you talk about pissing away a career. That's one of the most beautiful voices I've ever heard. And to be able to throw your life away doing drugs like that and killing yourself, Brian Abrams should be happy that he's not dead.
Actually, believe it or not, it's funny that I'm even saying this, but I do wish the best for him, though. I really hope that life has changed for him after that most recent incident with Mark Calderon. I hope that hopefully he saw the errors of his ways and finally has been able to get his life back on track. I don't wish ill will on anybody, but I do believe me that still hurts that part. And it's not so much if he said and called and said, "Hey, I'm going to make it right and pay me the money." It's not about the money. I just want him to acknowledge it and apologize for what he put me through. He never did that ever.
But
neither him nor his wife.
I think it was the booze. I've talked to him several times on the phone, and he was so nice and such a gracious person and thankful when he was sober. But when he was under the influence and for whatever reason he wasn't drunk the whole time. I don't know why he didn't come to his senses when he was sober and think, hey, this is the right thing to do is to pay Chad his $5,000 cut. That's what's mystifying to me. Why he wouldn't do that.
Yeah, how his wife thanked me was she put this rumor out online that I was on drugs. Me, of all people.
Right, yeah. The person who's never had drugs.
Or smoked a cigarette drugs. For crying out loud. I mean, that was their way of thanking me. So, another great story. I know we're coming up to the hour, but I got to have you tell. So your dad, who Jordan affectionately called the Silver Fox, he got really close to not only your dad, but to your mom and your sister and your wife and your kids. But your dad would come out on the road with us periodically. And there's a great story of your dad and Jordan running a pool table in Nashville.
Oh, it's without a doubt. Yeah. And it's reciprocated. My family absolutely loves Jordan, too. We all do. We were in Nashville, and that was probably the same year, 2004. And what was nice about this is we had a run of shows, and we actually had a rare off day in Nashville. And I think it was on that off day that we found a place called the Rack Room. I don't know if it still exists, but it's kind of maybe about a mile or so away from Music Row. And we decided, my dad likes to play pool. Jordan likes to play pool. They played together. Sometimes they would go to places here in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, when they would stay here and to bars or bowling alleys, and it would be kind of funny. Nobody would say that Jordan. We would never announce that. Hey, we're going to be bringing Jordan here. But people would be looking at him, thinking, yeah, and then they kind of shaking their head. You could almost see him shaking their head and thinking, no, there's just no way that's him. What would Jordan Knight be doing in Oak Creek, Wisconsin?
That's my favorite thing about Jordan, though. He's not a flashy guy. He's never been a flashy guy.
He isn't. And he's a blue jeans, T-shirt type of guy. And, he just blends in just like everybody. He's not a look at me, not a big attention guy. We were in Nashville and decided to go and have a couple of drinks and just relax. It was the four of us out on tour, me, you, my dad, and Jordan. And we went to the Rack Room, and they decided to play doubles. And what was really funny to me is I remember sitting on that, they had these red couches, and you and I were sitting down. Did you play pool at all?
I think you and I were just mesmerized at those two and just were like,
I remember you sitting
watching. Yeah, just watching them play.
Yeah, you were sitting next to me. Yeah. And we were watching them play, and they played these people who, it's going to sound like a generalization, but I really don't intend to be generalizing. You would never picture these people to be listening to the New Kids on the Block. They'd be the type of people who, when they were younger, would be criticizing, call them faggots and all this kind of stuff. They didn't obviously know who Jordan was. If it were a country star, I'm certain they would have, because this was not a rough crowd, but definitely not a pop music crowd. So what was really funny is watching my dad, silver hair and all, and Jordan wipe out the first group of guys, you know, and then they kind of high five and shook each other's hand, you know, the other people, and then somebody else would step up to challenge them, and then they took somebody down. I think they played 8 matches and they went 8-0. They just continued to. It was one of those, you know, sort of like in basketball, make it, take it. You know, you make a basket, you keep the ball, you win the game, you continue to play. So they won, and they would be playing, and they must have played for what, 2 hours?
They did.
We just sat there watching. They cleaned everybody. They didn't lose once that night. Didn't play for money or anything. Just you know, you set your quarters on the table and rack the balls up, and off you go. Yeah, they walked out of there undefeated. It was amazing. It was a great time on tour. Yeah, a memory that my dad still talks about to this day.
Somebody else I really miss, truly miss, and I'm sad that he took his own life, is
Tommy.
Yeah, Tommy Page. And you had the chance to meet Tommy Page on the road with Jordan as well. Why don't you tell that story? It's a great story, too.
Yeah, it kind of hurts. Yeah, I didn't have the relationship with Tommy that you did. You obviously had met and talked with him more, but the times that I did get a chance to talk with him. When he had that song out, we were in high school, I'll Be Your Everything, reached number one in 1990. Really beautiful song. Love the words. And it was co-written and co-produced by Jordan and Danny. Jordan told us the story one time when we picked him up from an airport in Chicago and we were driving around, and you and I asked him, hey, you know, how at the height of the New Kids were you, did you get a chance to write and produce for Tommy? And I remember Jordan saying, you know, Maurice was doing all the stuff for us, and we wanted to show that we were more than just singers. So we wanted to get out there and write and produce, show, hey, listen, there's more to us than just, you know, 5 pop stars, you know, guys up there not playing instruments, doing things. And that's why Jordan was really meticulous about his piano playing. And, you know, he did that song with Tommy. They finished and wrote it. And
I believe in a hotel lobby, didn't they? Right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty certain that that's what Tommy said. Yeah, I think it was in a hotel lobby. They were playing in at Jordan. He and Jordan had finished the song up, because Tommy had A Shoulder to Cry On, which was out at the time, and that I believe was the follow up single.
And then Danny and Donnie did background vocals, and Jordan kind of had like a co lead vocal, if you will, in some parts of the song.
Right. Yep. Yeah. He certainly did. And I think the first time that I met him was maybe in 2003 in Pittsburgh. I think we were doing the Hard Rock Cafe show.
That's right. Yes, it was. Yep.
I won't even get to what ended up happening before that. That was where we laughed so hard, where he and my dad ended up running into that room. Remember, we had to pull off the road. They had to go to the bathroom so bad.
Oh, that's right.
We needed the video to see that. That was hilarious.
They both had to use the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, it was funny. And they said, Jimmy, you need to pull the car off the road right now, or something bad's going to happen. So it was shortly after that. That was the first time that I had personally met Tommy. But the really cool thing is that I had a chance to propose to Amy, you know, maybe a couple of months before that. And I sang, you said, you know, I would be really cool is if you would go up there and sing, I'll Be Your Everything. And my God, I didn't have a voice, anything like Tommy Page. But for some reason, the real crazy thing is I got up on stage, And I wasn't nervous at all singing in front of that crowd, and Jordan backed me up on the piano and sang his parts. And I'm just up there thinking, you know what, Jim, just don't mess up. don't screw the words up. You know, you're not only going to be proposing to your wife, but you're singing this dude's song who's playing the keyboards behind you. And that's the one and only time I've ever sang in public. But and I had a chance to tell Tommy about that, and he seemed genuinely touched at the time. But then he went out and did his thing with Jordan, and he'd pop up at different places. I know he was in a couple times in Pennsylvania. He came out. He was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania one time, and Connecticut. I think they did the song.
Yeah, he sang in New York City with us once.
Yeah,
that was
I was on that one. But yeah, it was he'd pop up, and I think at the time he was doing the record company thing, right? Is that
he
what
was.
The record company
yes.
was?
Yes, yeah. Yep. He was working in radio promo. Tommy had had so many high-profile jobs. He worked his rear end off. And that's why everybody in the business loves him. I mean, he worked for Billboard, Pandora, Warner Brothers.
He ran Billboard.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. What a career he had. And just, he left behind such an amazing family. And I can't say enough wonderful things about Tommy. I have so many stories and so many phone calls that I cherish to this day.
Oh, that shocked the hell out of me. It kind of shook me a little bit when I heard the news that that he had taken his life. I think he had hanged himself, right?
Yeah, he did. Yep.
And it was. I still can't believe it to this day, because you know, something had been going on. You know, did he have a husband? Was he married?
He did, and he had kids. Yeah. I mean, things looked to be really good in his world. But again, you just never know what people are suffering from. That's why you should always be nice and kind, because you never know what people need to hear at that time. Maybe your kindness can be the difference, you know?
Yeah, and you never know when the last time you're going to be able to see somebody.
Right.
When I hugged him leaving Connecticut that one time, that was the last time that I'd ever seen him. I never thought, I just thought, you know, maybe he'd pop up again somewhere down the road, or I'd see him. That was the last time that we had a chance to speak. And, you know, just think of how Jordan and Danny and Don feel. You know, it's just startling. To me, that one really... You know, it's not like, I don't think he had a drug problem. I don't think he had a drinking problem. That's what was really kind of shocking to me. You know, you would see on the face, you'd think, you know, that here's somebody who really has his act together. And, you know, what would cause, especially to leave kids behind?
Right.
Cause you to do that.
So we're at the hour mark. I'm going to have you on again. You can count on that. There's just so many stories to rehash. But one thing I'd like for you to do, if you will, is... maybe tell people something they might not know about. For example, we'll start with Jordan. What do you think something is that not a lot of people know about Jordan Knight? Since you got to spend so much time with him.
Yeah, I think you encapsulated it really good when you said that he really enjoys the time away. No, don't get me wrong. He enjoys the fans and he enjoys the stage. You know, otherwise, he wouldn't do that. But... I look, and I'm standing right now, and I'm looking out at my backyard, and I look where the fire pit used to be in the backyard, and I remember that time that we were out there after midnight, and you know, just drinking wine coolers or whatever, and just acting crazy. Our buddy Jason Dean was pulling his pants down and running through the fire and stuff like that, doing crazy, and just remember his laugh and him cackling. That's the Jordan that I know and love and just remain. And that's just one instance. And for New Kids fans, just a little tidbit that you might not know if you've never eaten with him, especially breakfast. Do you remember he would like those, was it eggs over easy? And then he'd put the ketchup on the eggs.
And sometimes hash too.
And something, yeah, right. And then he would mix it all up together and eat it. And then I told him, I can't even look at you eat this. Man, this is making me sick. He said, it's all going to go in the same spot anyway.
And then he'd steal the silverware and plates sometimes from the hotel.
Right. Yes, he would. And pillows.
And pillows, yeah. He liked to steal pillows too.
Yeah. He would jam it in the suitcase. And then we'd get out and we'd be out on the road. And I would look back in the back seat. And thinking, wait a minute, why do you have three pillows back there? He's like, I really like that pillow that we stayed at back in Pittsburgh or whatever. Like, okay, that's fine.
Here I said I'm going to cap it at the hour, but you just made me think of something. I'm going to throw this story in real quick before we get to Danny Wood. Then we'll have you do the same thing for Danny. But
sure. If
you recall the story, we were in Michigan. I don't know if it was outside Detroit, but we had just finished up a show. And... Mm-hmm. You had parked in a parking lot across from the venue. We had parked in the back, so I had taken the car and then driven it into the parking lot so I could follow you guys over there. And the cops got right behind me. Do you remember this?
Oh,
and,
yes,
and
I
pulled
do.
Me out of the car and started, like, frisking me and telling me to come clean. I know you were drinking. And I hadn't had a drop of alcohol. And this female cop kept just saying, nope, nope, I can smell it. I know you've been drinking. The best thing you can do is be honest. And they knew, by the way, that I had Jordan in the car with me because they were actually providing security at the show.
Right.
So it was so
like,
strange
did you
to
see
me.
Him up on stage? Yeah, that's what I was yelling at the cops.
Yeah, and you're yelling, and then they're yelling back at you, be quiet. And you're like, that's not the car. That's the wrong person. So I've got my legs spread. This lady is like patting me down. And then if you recall, she made me do like the, you know, touch your nose, say the ABCs backwards, the field sobriety test. The whole time this is going on, though, and this is why I believe they did this on purpose, four or five cop cars show up and they're all at the window getting pictures with Jordan and having him sign mm-hmm. stuff. Meanwhile, I'm doing all these, you know, these field sobriety tests. And then they just finally said, yep, you're good to go. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. Not even an apology, nothing. Just here they are laughing and posing with Jordan. And I'm meanwhile being, you know, interrogated for something I didn't even do.
Abusing power.
Abusing
now, this is just
power.
One instance. We love the fire and police and all that they do. But these people, yeah, they took it to kind of next level, especially when they're giving a field sobriety test to a person that they know doesn't drink and just saw up on stage for 2 hours.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If you recall, I called the police chief the next day. I never heard back, though. I left him a message. It really upset me, but I never heard back from them. But that story just stands out. I'm like, man, I got to bring that one up. All right. So yeah. do the same thing now for Danny Wood.
Sure.
Same thing. What would people be surprised to know about Danny?
With Danny, what I think is somebody who is so resolute and at a routine, and he's a good basketball player too. You know, I believe he had an opportunity to go play in college to do track and basketball, I think, if I'm not mistaken. He's a surprisingly good athlete. Even up until to his 30s, and you know, I haven't played basketball with him in a few years, but we shot hoops, I think, in Rockford one time. And when I say resolute, I mean he is. If you ever see Danny up close, he's put together very well. I mean, you can see that up on stage, but if you see him with his clothes off, his shirt off, and in shorts, you know, he looks like he could be in Muscle and Fitness magazine. You know, he would always be, even on the road, would make sure that there would be a place that he can go ahead and work out. And just a real fun-loving guy. You know, where Jordan, the difference between Danny and Jordan, Danny's more outward. Jordan's more inward. Would that be a fair assessment?
I would agree, yes. Yep.
Yeah. Where Danny would be more, and I think we highlighted it in some of the stories that we told, he'd be more apt to bust balls, kind of mix it up, and would like to be out in the limelight. But
yeah, Danny would make you the butt of the joke where Jordan would be joking along with you.
Right. Yeah. And that's not in a mean-spirited way.
No, not at all.
It's just a different style, you know,
right.
and you have to, where it might come off a little bit, Chad and I can take it. You know, we've been in broadcasting a long time. That's pretty much the way it goes all over the place. You know, whether or not you're in the performing arts or not, you know, if just sometimes, you know, you have those friends who like to ruffle feathers a little bit, but it's good. It's always like it's not in a mean-spirited way.
I would agree.
It's all fun. Yeah, it's all fun. Yeah, and we do have to do this again. And I'm sorry that I talk so much.
Oh my gosh, not at all.
Podcast. I apologize if you
this is what they wanted, Jim. This is what they wanted.
Really?
One thing I do want you to talk about again. This will be our last story, and then I'm going to have you back on for round two. But there's an awesome story of Danny coming to your parents' house and doing, I don't know if it was a 4th of July or a birthday party, and we were doing Jello shots, and it was like, it wasn't Danny Wood of New Kids. This was just Danny Wood hanging out with family and friends, and I believe your mom's neighbors were there. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. And I do remember we had pulled up that day. It was right after the argument that you had with Danny about that's when Danny told us the story about how they were forced to do that cheesy pose for the Christmas album. We were pulling up the driveway that time. We were on the road. You guys were on the road for a while. We had been at home. You were staying with us for about a week, and you guys just wanted a home-cooked meal. So my mom is a great cook, like your mom is. My God, you talk about the best spaghetti in the entire world. Chad's mom makes the best spaghetti. But that's neither here nor there. They wanted a home-cooked meal, so we went over to my parents' house. And then next door, my mom's best friend had lived next door at the time, and they were having a backyard party. And my mom said, "Well, you want to go next door and have a couple of drinks? You know, they have the Jello shots and stuff." And sure, of course. You know, so me, you, Amy, Danny, we went next door, and we're mixing it up. And then the funny thing is, you know, we didn't tell anybody there that was Danny, but Jan, my mom's friend, the one who owned the house next door, her niece was over and was a big New Kids fan, and she kept like looking over at Danny, and it was kind of looking like, oh, this boy, he really looks familiar. And they told him, or they told her that it was him, like the day after, and she was almost in tears. She's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe he was there, and I didn't have a chance to talk to him. And why didn't you tell us?" And you know, but we didn't want to make a spectacle, you know, that or hey, everybody, it's Danny Wood from New Kids on the Block. You know, that's kind of campy. You know, if somebody can figure it out, they figure it out. But again, like I said, you know, who would ever imagine that somebody would be sitting in suburban Milwaukee on a summer day in your aunt's backyard? You know, you just wouldn't pick that out.
That's right.
Just think, yeah, it's a good looking guy. And, you know, it's one of Jim and Chad's friends.
You know, I also want people to know, and I've been very vocal about this. We all know that Jordan Knight is super talented. He's an amazing singer songwriter. When you put Jordan behind a piano, he just shines. Right. But Danny Wood never got the credit when he was in the band because it was more all about Jordan, Joey, and Donnie, and John and Danny were just kind of in the background. But I was so happy for Danny when he was able to step out on his own, put out his solo music, and people really got the chance to just see how amazing he is. And that work that he did on Second Face and all the other projects he did thereafter, they were really good. And again, you have to know that Danny wrote those songs, he produced those songs, he played on those songs, and he could do it live. You know, and I just want people to know that there is so much more to Danny Wood than meets the eye.
Yeah, and if I can piggyback on that, too, he was a good guitar player. And,
yes.
You know, we weren't just blowing smoke up his ass when he would go ahead and do this kind of stuff. He had played one time, and I can't remember if it was the Madison or Milwaukee, where he was, I think it was the private concert for the people in Madison that he had performed for the radio station. And I said, you know, man, that was really good. That's a good song, and you're good on guitar. And the thing is, I don't know if this has to do with feeling overshadowed in the New Kids days or whatever. He's like, ah, that was shit. That sucked. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, if I knew how to do that half as good as he did, you know, I'd be trying to take my act on the road.
Right.
And there he was doing that. But he had, you know, I think that he genuinely didn't think, you know, because he didn't sell a million albums, or his single or his album didn't go gold like Jordan and Joey did when they put it out, that, you know, maybe he felt that he was inferior to those guys. But I think that you hit it right on the head. He's not. He's equally as talented. All five of them are talented. Even John, the person who on stage would be the probably fifth out of five, if you would, for the fans. He has an unbelievable real estate business that he had for years, and made more money probably doing that than he did in the New Kids days.
And so, one of the nicest guys too.
Oh, if without a doubt, yeah. So all five of those guys are wonderfully talented. All in their own way, not only just musically, but just really good guys. And, you know, of course, we can speak most to Danny and Jordan.
And we got to relive those times again just a few short years ago when I went back out on the road for Danny's solo wood tour. And again, I was just in awe every night watching him perform in these intimate venues. And here's another thing I want to put out before we hang up. I know I've been saying we're going to hang up like for the last 15 minutes, but
I could talk to you for 5 hours.
But Danny has put out more solo albums than any of them.
Right.
When you add them all up, and he's just, I'm really hoping, fingers crossed, that he does some more solo wood dates. He's been teasing it on social media, and I really hope that he picks up the phone and invites me back out. I'd go out, no questions asked again. I always have a great time being with him, but most importantly, I love watching him perform, and I love watching him in his element. So if you haven't checked out a Danny Wood solo album, I don't care if you're Second Face or Coming Home or any of them, originally from Dorchester, you pick one. Just give it a listen and you'll be blown away as well. Jim, thank you so much. I'm going to have you on. We have way more stories to talk about. So,
yeah, well, definitely. Let's talk about the ones where we talked program directors in across the country when we were on tour to having us do radio air shifts at their building without ever handing them a resume or whatever. We we got a couple of stories there that people want to hear. Yeah, I'd love to get into it. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and thank you so much to anybody who's listening to Chad's podcast, and thank you for being good to my best friend too. I really appreciate it.
Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Chad Taylor Radio, and don't forget to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.